Blog Talk Radio.
Failure is not final. Your life is not through. Now with your testimony, God can use you too. If you didn't know the pain of life, wouldn't know the joy of life and how God always brings you through. No need for complaining, just look at this, it's just training to be ready, what God has for you. Tell yourself.
Welcome to Atlanta Life Radio. There is life after Leon. Join the conversation with blogger Allie Ward as she shares her journey of self-discovery and empowerment after being laid off. This show is a conversation and an inspiration and uplifting show for individuals making decisions on what to do next after losing a job. The opinions expressed on this radio program are for discussion or inspirational purposes only. They do not serve as treatment or as a professional diagnosis. All listeners are advised that neither the host or web talk radio agents shall be held liable for the content of programs, including advice given. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions based upon receiving appropriate consultation with a licensed professional and who have been given the opportunity to consider completely each listener's circumstances and not be reliant upon the content of this web talk radio program. Now, if you need to speak to the patient or join the conversation, and here I present Julie.
Hello, and welcome to the next episode of There is Life After Layoff Radio. I'm Ollie, your host, and along with my co-host, Minister Dr. Regina Ward, also known as Doc, the founder of Elite Psychological Services and who is a licensed professional counselor specializing in anxiety, adjustment, and depressive disorders. It is always our pleasure to be your guide as I take this journey of self-discovery and empowerment after recently being laid off, and as Doc affirms normalcy of feelings while offering you practical solutions. Please join in on the conversation with us every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. through Atlanta Life Radio at www.atlantaliferadio.com. You can also follow my blog at www.thereislifeafterlayoff.com. And if you wish to contact us, you can do so via email at thereislifeafterlayoff@gmail.com. And I'm also tweeting, so you can follow me at AllieWard45. And on behalf of Doc and myself, we sincerely thank you for listening and joining us once again as we share with you our insights into the experience of being laid off. Good evening, Doc. Thanks for being here, and once again, congratulations. I took great pleasure in being able to witness your ordination as a minister this past Sunday. Can you please share with our listening audience exactly what that means to you?
Wow. Number one, thank you for attending. It definitely was beyond my expectation, the service in itself and what it meant to me mostly, one, having family there, friends and family. I had representation from my elementary school, my high school, my college, my sorority, former coworkers and family. So support, as well as from my former dance ministry. So I was definitely well supported. Ministry to me is, as we were told that day, most people see it as another accolade, as a step up, but really it's a step down. It's a time for me, or really just a paper, because I've on my daily walk, I serve people So this is just a step down for me to continue to serve people. So I'm very excited. It's my pleasure being here tonight. I'm confident that our topic tonight is going to be very insightful and enlightening to people. So I can't wait till we actually get engaged in our topic tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Doc. You know, and I, too, am so humbled and encouraged by the opportunity to share this journey with not only you and Atlanta Life Radio, but most of all with the community who has really shown us much love and support since we started this journey. So without further ado, as always, before we move forward into tonight's show, I must remind those people who may be listening for the first time or who may be calling in for the first time that we are here to use this forum as a way to uplift, as a way to empower, and hopefully to inspire those of you who have been affected by a layoff. We are certainly not here to complain. We are not here to ridicule or point fingers at our former employers or colleagues or any individuals. And we are definitely not here to feel sorry for ourselves. We are here so that, number one, I can share with you my journey of rediscovery and empowerment. But most of all, we are here to serve you, the community, in an effort to give you a voice and give you an opportunity to share your story. Okay, so it's time to get started. First, though, I would really like to remind all of our listeners that we have launched the Atlanta Life Radio Virtual Book Club, and it launched starting in the month of February. If you are interested in joining our virtual book club, please go to the Atlanta Life Radio website by clicking on the book club and clicking on book club in the menu at the top. The website is www.atlantaliferadio.com. Now, the book that we're reading this month is entitled The Shack, and it's written by William P. Young. And you can purchase the books through Amazon.com, and there's also a wonderful website that is half.com, which is spelled H-A-L-F.com. They have some wonderful prices on that website. You can also get it through your local bookstores or any Christian bookstore. Now, I'm on my second reading of this book, but I'm going to tell you that my relationship with God was not the same after I finished reading it the first time, and it will truly bless you. So I encourage those of you who wish to join us on this journey through the book, The Shack, written by William Young, please do so. Now, in keeping with the spirit of Black History Month as we celebrate it in the month of February, I also want to remind our listeners that Doc and I have been given the honor of being able to sit down with civil rights legend Dr. C.T. Vivian. And for those of you who may not know who Dr. Vivian is a minister, an author, and he was a very close friend and lieutenant of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. throughout the American Civil Rights Movement. Dr. Vivian was also an active participant in the Freedom Rides during 1961, which were efforts that were made by civil rights activists to challenge the status quo by riding various forms of public transportation in the South to challenge local laws or customs that enforce segregation. And they were oftentimes met with violence and brutality. Dr. Vivian currently resides in Atlanta and is the founder of the C.T. Vivian Leadership Institute, which was set up to largely create a model leadership culture in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Vivian continues to speak publicly and offer workshops and has done many conferences around the country and the world, including at the United Nations. So Doc and I are really honored to have been given this opportunity, and we will be videotaping that conversation that we have with Dr. Vivian, and we will air that conversation and that interview on our February 26th show, so you don't want to miss it, so set it your calendars accordingly, and please remember to tune in. Now, once again, as we lead in to tonight's topic about facing fears, it led me to begin to think about the presence of fear throughout Black history and about how, if fear had not been faced and conquered, we as a people probably would not be where we are today.
And I wanted to focus on children facing fears in those times back in when we were struggling through the civil rights and fighting for equal rights. And now in thinking back, I'm reminded about the story of the Little Rock Nine. Now, I don't know if many of you are familiar with that story. These were a group of African-American students who had enrolled in Little Rock Central High School in 1957, and they were allowed to enroll in the high school as a result of a Supreme Court's decision to desegregate the public schools. Now, it was their enrollment which led to what is now known as the Little Rock Crisis, and it has been considered one of the most important events in American civil rights in that movement. The students were met, their enrollment in that school, they were met with a lot of threats, and as a result of threats made by several of the segregationist councils to prevent the students from entering the segregated schools, the governor at the time, now mind you, this is the governor of the state of Arkansas, he, on September 4th, 1957, he actually deployed the National Guard to block the students' entrance into the schools. Can you believe that? Now, this blocking of students, yes, from keeping them out, trying to keep them out of the school, made national headlines, and it was said to have polarized the nation. Now, one of those original Little Rock Nine students, her name is Elizabeth Eckford. She made a statement in my research that said that they were so fearful of what was going on that she, as the crowd was yelling and shouting at them, she just struggled to find a friendly face in the crowd, someone who she could look to who could possibly help, you know, in the fear that they were facing. And she thought she had found an old woman who seemed to be kind in the crowd. But guess what? When she looked back at the woman spat on her. Yes, she actually spit on her. So that had to have been devastating to a young girl, you know, when she was just looking for someone to help her. Now, just to take this a step further, the only way that these students were able to enter into the high school, it took an act of the president at the time, who was Dwight Eisenhower. He actually had to federalize an entire 10,000-member National Guard unit, which helped to take the power away from the governor, and also only under the protection of the United States Army were the nine students able to enter into the school. And even though the students were eventually admitted, they were still subjected to a year of physical and verbal abuse. Now, one of the students, her name was Melba Patillo. She also wrote a book, and the name of the book is called Warriors Don't Cry. And in that book, she made reference to a couple of incidents that she faced. Now, can you imagine? One of the incidents that she talked about was that she actually had acid thrown in her eyes. Mm-hmm. Okay? And she had to face stuff like that every day. And another incident that she recalled in her book was that a group of white girls had trapped her in a bathroom stall and attempted to burn her alive by dropping pieces of flaming paper on her. So can you imagine as a child facing that, just trying to go to school and get your education? But just to take that another step further, the governor, even though he had been warned by the president not to interfere with the Supreme Court's ruling to desegregate the schools, he was able to manipulate the system and ended up signing a bill which allowed the Little Rock School District to close all four of the public high schools in the city. And as a result of this, the high schools remained closed for an entire year, and this has become known as the lost year. A lot of people probably don't know that. All those students were kept from going to school because of that hatred for a whole year. Okay. Now, I'm also reminded of a young girl. Now, mind you, she is 6 years old, by the name of Ruby Bridges. And I actually learned this from my daughter in a lesson that she was studying in her school. And during the spring of 1960, this young girl was one of six students who was able to pass a test that determined that she was able to go to school with white kids in the city of New Orleans. And she was trying to attend an all-white elementary school by the name of William France Elementary School. And after she was admitted, all of the parents withdrew their students. So she was the only student sitting in the
wow.
class, and the teacher was teaching one student. Yeah, unbelievable, huh? But lastly, and certainly not least, I'm reminded of how Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. faced his fears in his last speech that he made the night before he was assassinated on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, Dr. King, of course, was used to receiving death threats, and he received them constantly. And this ended up resulting in him actually making death a central part of his philosophy. Now, he believed in and taught that murder could not stop the struggle for equal rights. And even though Dr. King was advised against traveling to Memphis, and he was going in support of the African-American sanitation workers who were at the time protesting against unequal wages and unequal working conditions, he felt obligated to go and support them. Now, in Dr. King's speech, which has now become famously known as the I've Been to the Mountaintop speech, he made reference to his fear and how he was handling it in the last two lines of that speech. And I'd like to quote those last two lines. And I quote, "And so I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." So he was letting those people know, because a lot of people felt that in that speech, Dr. King really knew that he was about to die, or that he foretold, or he saw that he was going to be killed. So he was letting them know, those of you who are planning to kill me, I don't fear you. Mm-hmm. So throughout history, many have faced insurmountable fears, and as a result, though, of them being able to face those fears, great contributions have been made, and, you know, we look at it now, facing those fears have afforded you and I, Doc, the right to be able to reach the community through this forum. Now, in preparation for dealing with tonight's discussion regarding fear, I was reminded about several areas in my life where, as a result of fear, I was led astray and I was tricked into thinking that I am less than what God says I am. Now, for a long time, I really couldn't put my finger on it. But then once I finally learned to listen to God's voice, he gave me some clarity. But before I start, I really feel the need to explain something about my transparency. When God revealed to me that the only way that this journey of theirs, Life After Layup, is going to be effective, and the only way that I was going to be able to minister to his people, to people who are really hurting, is that I was going to have to be willing to be totally transparent about my experiences. And that meant not only the good, but also the trials and the tribulations and the struggles that I've encountered, you know, along the way. So when you really think about it, that made perfect sense to me, because if you think about Jesus, who did he walk among? He walked among the people in the streets. He met them where they were to meet their needs. He didn't sit up in the temples. And so he went down to where the people were. So when God presented this idea to me, I felt in my heart that as long as I was doing God's will for my life, I was okay with being transparent. Because I've known right from the start that this journey is more about the people than it is about me. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, I think it's important when we're talking about fear that we probably need to define it a little bit. We all know that fear is an emotion that we feel from time to time, but it's also important to know that some fear is healthy, because some fear actually helps keep us from getting in trouble, or it may keep us safe. For example, you know you're not going to walk out into oncoming traffic because you have a fear of being hit by a car. So some fear is healthy. But then there is also the type of fear, the unhealthy kind of fear, that can torment us in our lives and ultimately keep us from making progress in our lives. And this kind of fear can actually affect the quality of life that you live. Now, fear is probably one of the most powerful negative emotions that we experience in our lives. Now, and the reason why I talked about the children facing fear in Black history was because one of the biggest fears that I have faced, and it stems back to my childhood, is the fear that I always felt as though I was never good enough.
Mm.
Or that I never quite fit in. Now, the main reason that I was made to feel this way was because of my appearance. Now, let me explain that. Now, picture this. Here I was, this light-skinned little Black girl with long Indian braids all the way down my back, actually past my butt. And back then, you know, when I grew up, everybody referred to good and bad hair. And I never quite understood that description because hair is hair. But because of the insecurities of a few people, many of the Black girls in my neighborhood and in my school used to taunt me, pick on me, and say that I thought I was better than them because I had a different grade of hair. Now, I understand now that it was their own insecurities back, but back then I didn't know that. I didn't have a relationship with God like I do now. And so it made me feel insecure in my own skin. If they only knew really how I felt. It got to a point, though, there, and I'm dating myself when I say this, because it was a song that came out years and years ago that was sung by Cher of the Sonny and Cher fame. That was, the name of the song was called Half Breed. Now, I hated that song. Because somebody caught on to that, and I can remember when that song came out the next day, that's what they were calling me in school. They were calling me half-breed. Now, so I guess you could say that back then I was a victim of bullying before the term really became popular and where before people really talked about it like they're talking about it now. And this continuous taunting that I experienced really led to my feeling ashamed and rejected a lot of the time, and it caused me to be insecure and never really sure of who I was or where I fit in. You know, it got to a point where from week to week they would pick and choose the times when they wanted to be my friend, or, you know, I could have been I was the flavor of the week, so to speak, and they, you know, I was the one that they picked on that in a particular week, and it got to a point where I hated to go to school because I didn't know what I was going to face. So during the time that they wanted to be my friend, it was everything was cool, but then on those off weeks or whatever, when they were feeling froggy, or I guess you would call it, you know, I had to find other friends. So this was just something that I really struggled with, and I struggled with an identity crisis. But just when I thought that I might have a chance for a brand new start, my family had made a decision to relocate from up north to down south for family reasons, but it didn't get any better because at the time, now mind you, at the time when I moved, I was getting ready to enter into junior high school. Now, the area of where my new school was going to be located, it had a rather large Hispanic population. Now, at the new school that I was going to be attending, I had to sign up for an elective, so I decided to sign up for a Spanish class. Well, on the first day of class, I found myself sitting in the middle of an all-Spanish-speaking class, and the main rule was that you could speak no English. Wow. So here I am sitting here. I knew no Spanish. Talk about uncomfortable and a fish out of water. Now, I'm sitting here trying to explain to the teacher that I'm not Spanish, and she kept cutting me off. She wouldn't allow me to speak because I had to speak in Spanish, but I knew no Spanish. So I'm sitting there looking crazy, and she's trying to talk to me, and I can't respond to her because I didn't know any Spanish. And all the kids are looking at me like I'm just crazy. So I had to sit through the entire class just looking stupid. And after class, I was finally able to explain to the teacher that they had made a mistake and that, in fact, I was not Hispanic, but I was, in fact, African-American. Well, let me tell you, she was so shocked, and she proceeded to tell me, well, you look like you're Spanish. Like, wow. Okay, I don't know what I am. So, you know, she was pretty much telling me, no, you look Hispanic, so you should be Hispanic. That was pretty much what her attitude was, and I assured her, no, I'm not Hispanic, I'm African-American. So at any rate, that was humiliating. But it got straightened out, and I was removed from that class. So here again, I was being judged by the way I looked. Even though all my paperwork had been completed, and of course on your paperwork you have to indicate what your nationality is, but did it dawn on them to check the paperwork? I guess not. So when I really started looking to look at myself in the mirror and to give some serious thought into who I really am, I now understand why I struggled with always trying to be a people pleaser and an overachiever. Because deep down inside, all I wanted to do was just be liked. So over the years, this has also carried over into the relationships that I have had. So, you know, I would get into these relationships, and because I just wanted to be liked and accepted, I would accept being treated with disrespect just because I didn't want and I was afraid of confrontation because I thought the outcome would be rejection. I still struggle with this from time to time. And I can remember my husband asking me, why do you try so hard sometimes? And then I had to really start and think about that, and all of this started coming out. That's why I try so hard to please people and make people happy and just try to gain acceptance. How did I learn to confront this fear? Mainly with the word of God and through much prayer, because I know now that God's word says that I shall not fear. I finally also learned how to pray for courage and to be able to confront my fears, because I know that courage is progress in the face of fear. And it was not until I started living to please God instead of people and to really diligently seek his peace in my life did I learn what God says I am. And you know what? It doesn't matter anymore what people think about me. And so I've also come to understand and know that it's okay if everybody does not like me, because truth be told, I don't like everybody that I come in contact with. You know, not everybody that you meet is going to be a friend. So, you know, we have to be really honest about that, and that's the truth. But what I have learned, though, even though I may not like somebody, I've learned to respect them. And this helped me significantly, not only in my personal relationships, but also in the workplace. Because once I stopped focusing on who I liked and who I disliked, it simply started to focus on respecting them in their positions. Not only did my relationships at home and work improve, but my stress level went down. And I was able to live a more peaceful life while being able to move forward and live and walk in my true purpose for what God had for me. Now, I felt that it was important to share this experience that started when I was a child, because it is an example of how deeply rooted fear and how early it can start in our lives and how it can affect who we are as an adult and how we interact in our relationships. And so for this reason, I make a point to affirm in my children on a daily basis who they are according to God's standards and not according to the world's standards. So as we wind down to take our first station break, we encourage you to call us if you want to share your layoff experience or anything related to tonight's topic with our listening audience, or just simply to make a comment. You can reach us at 347-324-5246. Make sure that you press the number 1 to be added into the on-air lineup in our host queue. You are listening to There Is Life After Layoff Radio with your hosts, Ali and Doc. Please stay tuned. God can use you too.
If you didn't know the pain of life, you wouldn't know the joy of life and how God always brings you through.
just train me to be ready. What God has for you, tell yourself, no, in you, Lord, I have my faith in. Even when it seems, when you love, that's when you're.
You are listening to Atlanta Life Radio. There is life after layoff. We want to thank our global listening audience. This is your show. This is your voice, your story to inspire others. So please join Allie and Doc as they take this journey of discovery, as Allie looks at her life and discovers her purpose after being laid off. Guests, you can call in at 347-324-5246, and please remember to hit #1 so that you can be in the queue to talk to our show host. And now we'll return back to our show. Allie?
We are back. And if you are just joining us, welcome. And you're listening to There Is Life After Layoff Radio at www.AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And once again, I'm your host, Allie, along with my co-host, Doc. Please join us every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. and follow me on my blog at www.TheresLifeAfterLayoff.com and also on Twitter at AllieWard45. Doc, tonight's topic is so critical in a person being able to move forward in their lives. Can you briefly share with our listeners any fears that even as a psychologist you have had to deal with in getting to where you are in your walk?
Definitely. But before I share my personal experience, I want to first take this opportunity to say thank you, thank you, thank you so much for sharing your testimony with us. So many people do not know why they act the way they do or feel the way they do. And a lot of times it's deep-rooted hurt, emotions, rejections, and insecurities from things that, again, we've suppressed or repressed in our life. So as you're taking this journey, I feel for you that it's very therapeutic and cathartic, and you being transparent is really helping and healing other people. So, again, thank you for that story. What a wonderful story. You're welcome. For me, I'll say one of the main things that stick out to me is being a business owner, stepping out in faith of starting my own business. I've shared in previous shows that I was part of a group practice, and I heard the voice of God to tell me that I needed to step out and start my own business. And what did that look like for me? The only thing I had was basically a charge to go that I needed to get from the group practice and start my own practice to do some special things for God's people. With that, I had no idea of how successful I was going to be, what my clientele was going to look like, or even how I was going to get the money for the equipment, the furniture, and all the things I needed to start up a business, but I did have a charge to go. The funny thing about that, I was willing. It was when I started confiding in other people, telling them my dreams, my ideas, and my visions, that their insecurities and or fears tried to be transposed onto me. And so it made me slightly begin to start doubting, okay, is this the right thing to do? However, I looked the bull in the horn, took the bull by the horn, and I went on with what I know I heard. And from the first week I opened my business, I had a full clientele, and I'm coming on next month will be 5 years, and I haven't looked back. So for me, it's amazing how when you tell people your ideas that they can begin basically stopping that vision that you have for yourself. So you have to be very careful of who you share your ideas with, because your naysayers could try to hinder even what you know to be fact or to be true. Even recently, I'm afraid of heights, but I'm a very adventurous person. And one thing I've noticed about fear, the more disappointments, hurts that we have in our life, we start becoming paralyzed and we stop doing those things that we previously loved to do. And me being an adventurous person, again, I've had disappointments in my life. I've had failed relationships. And again, with every disappointment, I really feel like it pushes us further into paralyzation, and it starts allowing us to doubt ourselves. And I really feel like it's because we lose trust in people and start losing trust in ourselves. And with that being said, a few months ago, I had the opportunity to do an indoor rock climbing. And I can remember it was two little boys that had gone before me, and it was two sections that, and I think the wall was a 6 to 7 feet indoor wall, and I'd never done it before, but it was one of those things, again, I said I was going to take the bull by the horn and face my fears. Again, I'm afraid of heights. So I watched the first little boy. He didn't even get halfway up the wall, and he took the bungee jump and released and let go. His brother went next and got midway to the midway point, which was a very good feat for him, but then he jumped and let go. Then it was my time. So I can recall going up the wall with every step, and I had gotten to the midpoint, and I told myself that, okay, this is good. But what allowed me to keep going was I was not going to let two little boys outdo me. So sometimes.
That's funny. That is so funny.
Sometimes you have to be so narcissistic or competitive that you face your fear and you keep on going, because honestly, that was the only thing that allowed me to keep tracking up that wall. And I remember I climbed, and I could hear the people that were down on the ground witnessing, cheering me on. That's important because we need our cheerleaders to encourage us to keep on going.
Absolutely.
Made it to the top. Once I made it to the top, there was a bell that you could ring.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was the end, but that wasn't the end. I had to jump from the top on the bungee cord. And I remember I stopped, I looked down and said, I can't do it. But what I did, I decided to close my eyes and just let go. Very significant. Sometimes we just need to close our eyes and let go and face our fears.
Wow.
So those are some important points in my life about fear.
Oh, my goodness. That is so awesome, that story. That is so cute, too. Thanks for sharing, Doc. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
It's our favorite time in the show. Melinda, do we have any callers on the line?
Well, we have several listeners tonight, and if anybody wants to be queued in live so they can join in the conversation with Allie and Doc, please just hit one right now, and I'll bring you right onto the air. So I guess, ladies, why don't we just keep talking, and as soon as someone wants to come on the air, I'll bring them on.
Great. Okay, absolutely. I think, you know, it's probably a good time, Doc, for us to probably conversate and go over some, you know, questions and just have some discussion and further on this topic tonight, because it is just really critical, as I stated earlier, and the person being able to move forward. So are there any questions that you wanted to talk about?
Definitely. There, as a therapist, there's always questions. It's like I wanted to chime in and say, wait, Allie, I have a question, but okay, I allowed you. Again, your story and even your testimony is so awesome. One question I do have is, how did you overcome that fear and rejection? Because rejection is what I'm finding, again, it's a big part of what begins to paralyze people when they and allow them to become fearful. So how did you overcome that?
Really, because I really started seeking God's word, and I relied on my faith in God to get me past that, because in my journey I've come to learn that faith is the only thing that can really conquer fear. Mm-hmm. You have faith in God that he's going to take you through it, because again, I say his word says we are not to fear. He is our vindicator, and he is to fight our battles, but we just have to be the ones willing to trust in him. And like you said, just close your eyes and let go. Give it to him. You know, don't give it to him, pray and ask him to help you, and then take it back and worry about it, because that's not giving it up to God. So once I got comfortable in my relationship with God, my personal relationship with God, I was comfortable enough to say, okay, God, you know, I can't do this by myself. I need to rely on you and your strength and what you say I am in your word. And I just simply asked him for his help. And that's the only thing that got me through that fear. I believe that might also be a reason why I've been an athlete most of my life, because I was made to feel uncomfortable in my own skin, and I didn't like the way I looked. And so I've always participated in athletics throughout my life. I mean, I've even gone as far as to do bodybuilding. And, you know, where I can make and mold myself. And it was a challenge, but it was something that I enjoyed doing. And it was really hard, but I accomplished it. And, you know, it was a goal I set for myself. And it allowed me to feel a little bit more comfortable with who I am and how I looked. And as I stated earlier, I got to a point where it didn't matter what other people thought, because I was comfortable with who I was, and I knew that God loved me, so I just relied on that.
I think that is so important, and you alluded to it when you gave your testimony. What we don't realize all the time, I was going to say most of the time, but all the time, when a person bullies or criticizes us, is their insecurities that they're projecting onto us. So what I would like to challenge our listening audience is not to accept or take on other people's projections of their insecurities. Don't own it. That's theirs. And even to the point, exactly, if you have to tell them that's your stuff, I'm giving it back to you. Better yet, I'm not even accepting it. And so that's really good. I truly feel that people become paralyzed or fearful of doing things when they have insurmountable heartache, because they begin losing their trust in themselves and other people. And so, again, I think it's important to kind of deal with and really become aware of what is causing that fear within you. Why do you feel like people lose faith in themselves and others?
First of all, because I think people have a tendency to rely and believe and put their trust in the wrong place. We, you know, instead of trusting in God, we trust in other people. And, you know, we as people, we know that we're imperfect, and therefore, you know, we're subject to fail. So when you put your faith and trust in something that is fallible, then you're going to come up short. So if you really look at it, your faith should be in God. He's our creator, and he knew us before we were born. He knew what the plan was for our life before we were born. He laid out our life, you know, pretty much put it into action before we were even thought of. Now, thinking of your life in terms of an invention, and God is the inventor. So when you want to know who you are and how you work, who should you go to? The person who made you.
That's good.
Which is God. So, you know, that only makes sense when, you know, you want to know how an invention works, you go to the inventor. So I finally got to the point where I realized, okay, God created me for something. And that's when I really started searching and trying to figure out who I was in God and what he had for me in my life, and started praying and asking him, lead me where you want me to go, because you, only you know what that plan is. And see, when we, it's okay to have a plan, but when it doesn't agree with God's plan, then things kind of get out of line.
Right.
So I started praying and asking God, what is it that you have planned for my life? I want you to lead me and put your finger on those things and those areas in my life that I need to work on. Targeted, because, you know, you're not going to really see that you need to change in certain areas until God really puts his finger on it and brings it to your attention. You're not going to realize that you need to change in those areas. So I had to seek my creator's input if I was going to ever get to where I needed to be and grow in my relationship and in my walk with God.
Wow. Let me ask you, did people around you, like your family members or the people that were closest to you, did they realize that you were struggling with insecurities, the fears of rejection, and kind of the bullying and what was going on? Or was this something that you suffered in silence?
I believe, you know, I did discuss it with my mom, and there were times when, you know, my brother, I can remember a specific instance where this girl, she was way bigger than I was, and she just wanted to beat up on me. Well, somebody proceeded to run and get my brother, and my brother beat her up. He protected me.
Good.
So, because my dad used to always tell him, you protect your sister, you take care of your little sister. And so he didn't know why he was beating her up, but all he knew is that, you know, he was protecting his little sister. So he kind of knew that there were things going on, and he protected me. And, you know, that night we got a knock on our door from her grandmother, but, you know. But
that
he stood
funny.
Up for me, and that right. made me feel good that he came to my you know, my rescue. And I did talk about it with my mom. But you know what, and I need to really be transparent again here, because I felt like I really couldn't go to my family, because some of what I was feeling, not only was I feeling ashamed of how I look, and I hate to say this because I love my family, but I have family members who are very fair-skinned, and so when my friends would see them, they would say, well, see, there's the reason why you're not black. So they look white. So it made me feel ashamed of how others in my family looked. And please hear me when I say this. I love my family. I was a child back then. I didn't know. I didn't understand what I was going through. But you know what? I love my family dearly, but all I know is that I felt ashamed.
You know,
and so,
that leaves,
I didn't feel.
Wow. That leaves me, it's funny like how things go back to childhood. One of my biggest insecurities was being skinny, and my mom would send us to Florida every summer, and you've been from Florida, know how hot it is in Florida. But I would wear pants the whole summer, 90, 100-degree weather, because I hated my skinny legs. I did. And it was not until, I think, about ninth grade that I started, I guess, getting compliments on my looks. But the funny thing is, it wasn't until I started my master's program, and it was Caucasian people that said, I can't stand you. You got those long, pretty legs. And the very thing that I hated as a child became one of the biggest things that I got compliments on, my long, skinny legs. And then I started realizing, wow, people like long legs. And so again, very funny that sometimes we build up in our mind our own securities and our fears about ourselves. So what you're saying is just, it leads me to that. Like, even when you talk about your long hair, you know, people, some people like long hair, some people like short hair. So it's about, again, what makes you comfortable. It's about you being comfortable in your skin. It's about you embracing the person that God created you to be.
Exactly.
I feel like when we are overcome by negative emotions, it keeps us from achieving our goals, and we begin losing confidence in ourselves and our abilities. And what I found is that fear causes some people to have self-defeating behaviors such as drinking, drugs, or other negative actions. We find, especially in teenagers, that kids are turning to, like, self-mutilation, cutting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's very, very, very important to tap into the root cause of why you feel the way that you do. What suggestions would you give a person who wants to build their faith? Because I've heard you talk a lot about your faith is what kind of pulled you through this.
Absolutely. What I would first suggest, first and foremost, find a good Bible-based church, a Bible study group or a support system, people that you can fellowship with so that you can build those godly relationships so that people, they help hold you accountable. But make sure that you go somewhere and you feel comfortable and not condemned. Feel that you know that you are getting spiritually fed where you are. And I think a lot of times we as people, we get stuck in the tradition of church and we're just going through the motions, but really from week to week, we're not getting fed and we're not growing. Don't be afraid to admit to yourself, okay, well, I'm not getting anything out of this. I'm not growing. But know in your heart that you want to grow. So have courage, you know, here we go again, that word courage, to be able to face and make that choice and say, okay, well, maybe it's time for me to move somewhere else and seek a different ministry.
This, I hate to interrupt you. The conversation is just so awesome. But we do have a caller, and she's ready to join the conversation. So at this time, we have Raquel. Raquel, you are live, speaking with Allie and Doc.
Hi, Allie and Doc. This is Raquel. I was just wanted to call to piggyback on the conversation. It is very deep, and I'm pretty sure everyone that's listening is able to relate. And I'm definitely able to relate. But one thing, as a child, I had my mom that I can go to. She pretty much, right now, I can say validated me at home as opposed to, you know, I didn't know it was validation then, but she said, you can come to me and talk to me about anything. And I was like, even if somebody's being mean or bad to me, she was like, even then, and even, you know, about anything. So she would just ask me every day what actually happened, what I did, what I said, who hit me, who I hit, you know, just everything. So right now I feel that it's validation, but I'm just so glad that I had the opportunity to be able to share and to know that I had that with her. And a lot of people, you know, just hold back and pull back and do not share everything. And, you know, we all hide little things. But I'm just so glad that I had the opportunity to have that openness with her, regardless of who it hurt, if I had to get in trouble or someone else did. You know, it just gave me so much joy to know now that, you know, it just definitely validated me, you know?
Absolutely.
Thank you. How important that is. And so it sounds like your mom was your biggest cheerleader. Thank you so much for calling in.
We welcome you to continue to listen
each week and to continue calling.
Okay, I will do. Thank you.
Thanks, Raquel.
All right.
Okay, Doc, I think at this point in our show, do you want to go ahead and give us a summary of some of our key points tonight and also give us some practical solutions?
Definitely. Wow, this time has gone so fast. Definitely.
It sure has.
The first thing I would like to say is, again, take the bull by the horns, and that means face your fear head on. Even if you have to close your eyes and jump, do it. Fake it till you make it, which means you must behave as if it's already so until it becomes so. For example, pretend that you are confident, and as your confidence produces success, you would generate genuine confidence. And the purpose is not to get stuck in that self-fulfilling prophecy of fear.
Right.
Don't allow your fear to paralyze you from accomplishing your goals. Seek spiritual, professional guidance to allow you to work through the hurt, pain, or disappointment that causes you to become stuck. And remember, perfect love casts out all fear. I'm currently reading this book, and it's titled Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And I quote from him, it says, "Your limitations is the one you set up in your own mind." Most times, our greatest fears are set up in our own mind. Fear is an acronym that stands for false evidence appearing real. And it is a big way for the enemy to keep you from accomplishing the goals or fulfilling your purpose in life. So, again, don't allow those limitations that you set up in your own mind. And I'm going to leave you with this scripture, and it's 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. Again, it's 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. And it says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." And your growth work for next week is, 1, identify your greatest fear and challenge yourself to do something that you've always wanted to do. However, you've been too afraid to do it. And please call us and let us hear your story. Thank you.
Wow, Doc, as usual, you're right on point. Those are some great, great solutions and challenging growth work for next week. So I want to encourage and remember to all of our listeners that we have launched the Atlanta Life Radio Inspirational Book Club, and we are reading The Shack by William P. Young. It's not too late to sign up through the Atlanta Life Radio website at www.atlantaliferadio.com. And The Shack can be purchased at Amazon.com or through Half.com or in your local bookstore. And we look forward to some interesting, interesting conversation about this book. And we remind you that if you would visit our website and listen to the recordings of past shows, post a comment, like us on Facebook. And also, if you just don't want to be heard on the radio, you can always tweet us a concern or a question, and we'll try to address it on air for you. And please don't forget to plan to tune in on February 26th for our broadcast of our fireside chat with the legendary Dr. C.T. Vivian. You won't want to miss it. And I'm Allie. And on behalf of myself and my co-host, Doc, we thank you for joining us and continue to urge you to be encouraged. And yes, it may be hard to walk away from something, especially when you don't know what you're walking towards. But just know that when God is in it, all things are possible and new. Continue to join us on this journey and take a leap of faith past the fear in your life. Know that the bigger the obstacle, the bigger the blessing. But most of all, remember, there is life after layoff. Thank you and good night.
Worse off than you now.